Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, November 27. I'm Diane, and my partner at the microphone for the next hour is Vicki. We're pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Farmer shows students evolved ag stem practices. Abandoned properties rescued. Program puts land back on county tax rolls. And area water segments on impaired list. More than a dozen in North Iowa don't meet standards. Today's weather will be snow early in the morning with little or no accumulation. Windy today. Expect less than 2 hours of sunshine with a 55% chance of precipitation and average relative humidity 90%. Drying conditions poor. Mainly clear tonight. Average relative humidity 90%. Cloudy tomorrow. Little or no sunshine. And now, with the first story, here's Vicki.
Good morning. Farmer shows students evolved ag STEM practices. Middle schoolers shown uses of technology in farming. Science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM, students at Central Springs Middle School in Norris Springs learned the applications of STEM in agriculture. Norris Springs farmer Laura Cunningham visited their classroom on Thursday, November 21st, to demonstrate how she uses technology like satellite imaging and drones to keep track of her fields. Gidget Veach, the teacher in the Talented and Gifted program, and Angela Holt, the kindergarten through fifth grade instructional coach, had received a new challenge this year to write the curriculum and co-teach a STEM program for 7th and 8th graders with a focus on 21st century employable skills and science standards, Holt said. One component we chose was to show the students various job opportunities that use STEM, she said. We found that agriculture has evolved over the years, and STEM practices are getting increasingly utilized in the fields. On her family farm, Cunningham grows alfalfa, corn, soybeans, and rye with her husband. They also raise Angus cow-calf pairs, feed out calves, and sell beef to families and a couple restaurants. Holt said she wants the students to see the benefits of learning about STEM and the importance it carries in the workforce, even in agriculture. We are a farming community and feel it's important to bring agriculture to the classroom, Holt said. During her presentation, Cunningham went through the process of growing corn, from planting seeds to harvest, and showed the students what she looks for when she looks at the different satellite images of her field to gauge how healthy her crops are and identify any issues, focusing on all the different ways technology is used on the farm. There's a lot of perception that it's an old-fashioned career and you don't have to be involved in technology and science to be a farmer, and that's so far from the truth, she said. Since the students were learning about drones at the time, Cunningham focused particularly on how she uses drones, showing them a video that demonstrates how she uses it to look at problem areas in her crops, and then letting a few of the students fly her drone, a quadcopter, in the gym. She also showed them the different applications for using drones and how other agricultural careers, such as wildlife preservation and cattle farming, come into play with the technology. Cunningham said she wanted to talk to the students because, as a farmer, she thinks it is important that they get engaged in what's going on around them and even consider farming as a career. In these counties that feed the school district, up to 30% of people are employed in agriculture. So there are opportunities here if they wanted to go to college and come back home, she said. If we train them in what's involved in agriculture, maybe they'll come back, and that's important to me to have young people come back to the area. The main takeaway Cunningham said she wanted the students to have at the end of the presentation was to be curious and explore the STEM field. Technology is something that we can all connect over and talk about and get involved in and apply to our daily lives, she said. Diane?
Abandoned properties rescued. Program puts land back on county tax rolls. Trenda Ropey likes to garden. She tended to one in what she thought was her yard in the neighborhood of 16th Street Northeast and North Pennsylvania Avenue. But among the flora lay a secret. The land was not hers. In fact, the sliver of land was owned by someone else, someone who had not paid their property taxes. Under state law, if a landowner doesn't pay their property taxes, the county treasurer must hold an annual sale in June where that debt is offered for purchase, called a tax sale certificate. Once the certificate is purchased, a tax lien is placed on the property. If the property owner doesn't pay off the lien, the certificate holder can then start the process to obtain a tax deed to the property. But if the property is offered at the annual sale twice and no one buys the tax sale certificate, it ends up back in the county's lap, and there the property stays. That's what has happened to 44 properties in Cerro Gordo County, some of which have been off county tax rolls since 1985. In 2017, County Treasurer Pat Wright came up with a plan. She asked the Board of Supervisors for money to hire real estate lawyers to help the county track down the owners and give them the legally required 90 days to clear the debt. After that, with the help of lawyers and County Supervisor Tim Latham, who is also a real estate agent, Wright would herself turn realtor of a sort and work to sell each property at whatever reasonable price would get them earning taxes again. The board agreed, and a program that, to everyone's knowledge, has never been undertaken anywhere else in Iowa began here. It took a year and a half just to get started and research the properties, Wright said. Many of the owners were dead, she said. Reactions to the 90-day affidavit varied. One deceased person's heir told them to never talk to him again. Some simply didn't respond. Most of them were, tear downs done by the city of Mason City, a condemnation, and the owner walked away, Wright said. Wright and Latham visited every one of the properties and developed a sale price for each based on its assessed value, taxes, and the neighborhood. Then they began trying to sell them one by one. Some of the properties, like the one near Trenda Ropey, are no more than a small strip of land that no one nearby realizes isn't theirs. Wright said one property on the north side presents a particularly sticky situation, as one adjoining neighbor has encroached on the abandoned property, but also won't buy it from the county. Habitat for Humanity bought three of the properties. Mason City bought one. Developers bought many others. Most of the properties lay within Mason City limits. Mason City Finance Director Kevin Jacobson said in the past, Treasurer Wright would send him information about people who were interested in the properties and asking whether the city would write off the difference between the debt owned and the offer. Jacobson would have to take each and every one of those to the city council for consideration. In reality, the county, under the law, has the right all along to write off that difference, and under Wright's program, That's what happened. About $85,000 was written off in total. Latham stressed that the $85,000 would have never been redeemed. Jacobson agreed. It was good to go through this process in that we don't have to go out and remove the snow, mow the grass on the abandoned properties, or deal with those types of issues anymore, Jacobson said. This makes it much cleaner, and it gets the properties paying taxes much sooner. And if we get $1,000 in taxes, that's $1,000 more than we had before. Earlier this month, Wright appeared again before the County Board of Supervisors, this time to report the results of her work. In the end, the county successfully deeded 36 properties. 34 are back on the tax rolls, some for the first time in three decades. The total cost of Wright's program was $36,441, and including the initial $20,000 investment, the property sold netted $37,165. And Ropi really does own her garden now. She bought the property upon which it was planted for $500. Vicki.
Area water segments on impaired list. More than a dozen in North Iowa don't meet standards. More than a dozen North Iowa water bodies remain on the state's impaired waters list. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources released its draft 2018 list identifying water impairments on 622 river, lake, and wetland segments across the state, including Clear Lake, Winnebago River, and Bailey Creek, earlier this month for public comment. It's much, much easier to get on the list than to get off of it. But that's by design, said Roger Bruner, Iowa DNR Supervisor of Monitoring and Assessment Section. It gives us the assurance that improvements made are there to stay, so to speak. The Federal Clean Water Act requires states to compile a report for the Environmental Protection Agency every 2 years. Of the 1,421 water segments studied, which include portions of rivers, streams, lakes, reservoirs, and wetlands, 363 fully met the state's water quality standards, while 523 were identified as waters in need of further investigation, and 767 didn't fully meet the standards needed for their intended use and were impaired. An impairment means a segment of a water body doesn't meet established quality standards for their intended use. It doesn't mean a river or lake is grossly polluted, Bruner said. He characterized most impairments on the list as fairly minor and said people still use impaired rivers and lakes for everyday recreation without impact. It's important to remember the list doesn't measure magnitude, Bruner said. The analogy I used in the conference call is it's like you're going to the doctor and finding out your cholesterol is a little high. It doesn't mean you're going to die, but you should keep an eye on it. The most common river impairments in Iowa include the presence of bacteria and fish kills, for which the most common cause is animal waste. Clear Lake was added to the impaired waters list during the 2004 cycle as Category 5 due to E. coli, and it was added for blue-green algae during the 2016 cycle, the report shows. Segments of the Winnebago River, which flows 20.53 miles through several north-central Iowa counties, were added to the list in 2004 as a Category 5 for low fish count, and again in 2008 for E. coli. Some of the other North Iowa water bodies included on the list are the Shell Rock River, Crystal Lake, Chelsea Creek, Cedar River, Beaver Creek, and Rice Lake. All Iowa waters are designated for both aquatic life protection and water contact recreation. Others also may include one or both designations for drinking water and human health protection. Category 5 water bodies, or impaired waters, require a total maximum daily load, or TMDL. A TMDL is a water quality improvement plan created by the Iowa DNR, outlining data and practices that can be used to work toward reducing the impairment. Jeff Berkey's Iowa DNR Water Quality Improvement Plan, or TMDL, program coordinator, said the impaired waters list determines the TMDL group's workload that prioritized based on complexity, cost, and social impact. He said one of the group's top priorities is a statewide beach water quality improvement plan, which includes data from McIntosh Woods State Park because of their social impact. They're all important in their own way, but if you have to start focusing in work, then relatively speaking, we wanted to start with the lakes, Berkey said. The draft 2018 impaired waters list was compiled using 2012 through 2016 data from fixed station river, lake, and beach monitoring, weightable stream biological monitoring, fish tissue monitoring, and wetland shallow lakes monitoring, as well as several other data like the Iowa DNR's Fish Kill Database. Diane?
Service organizations collecting Christmas gifts for the military. A Mason City-based radio station has teamed up with area service organizations to collect items to send to U.S. military personnel overseas for Christmas. The Santa for Soldiers program, organized by 98.7 FM KISS Country, launched earlier this month at the All Veterans Center in Mason City. Individuals are encouraged to drop off new unwrapped items at the All Vets Center in Mason City and American Legion posts in Osage, Rockwell, and Manly before December 7. They may also be dropped off at Fleet Farm in Mason City from 8 to 11 a.m. Friday and at Christmas by the Lake on December 7th in Clear Lake. Donations being accepted include DVDs, ramen noodles, instant oatmeal, handwritten cards, video games, instant coffee, tea, headphones with earbuds, stationery, squirt guns, beef jerky, stress balls, candy, popcorn, personal serving mac and cheese, magazines, board games, books, plastic cups, personal hygiene items, Yeti cups, footballs, Fox River socks, and Girl Scout cookies. Children are also asked to write holiday letters to soldiers that may be dropped off at the locations where the Red Stellar mobile studio barn is set up. The All Veterans Center is in Mason City opens at 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Monetary donations may be given through the radio station's PayPal account. Vicki.
Mason City Airport finds new manager. Sims tabbed to lead airport into next phase. When current Mason City Airport manager Pam Osgood steps down in December after 17 years at the post, there won't be any time between leaders. After a month-long search for Osgood's replacement, the Mason City Airport Commission has announced that the next manager will be the airport's existing operations supervisor, David Sims. In a news release, the Mason City Municipal Airport said that Sims, who has been with the transportation hub for the past 13 years, will assume the position on December 9th. A 12-year veteran of the Clear Lake Fire Department, Sims received his degree in aviation management from Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. Not long after his 10-year starts, Sims will be taxed with overseeing a taxiway relocation to expand the airport's parking apron. For the project, the airport is receiving about $3 million through airport improvement program grants from the federal government. The work is in the initial stages and still needs to be engineered, designed, and then bid. Diane?
Fire on Madison Avenue makes home uninhabitable. A burning mattress in the middle of the street has led to something of a mystery for the Mason City Fire Department. The fire department received a call about something burning in the street at 712 North Madison Avenue at 7:29 a.m. When firefighters arrived on scene, they found remnants of a mattress burning in front of the multifamily home, which also happened to be on fire, according to the fire department. Here's the mysterious part. Though all three units in the building were occupied at the time, no one could say how the mattress ended up in the middle of the street. No one was injured. The firefighters saved the building, though the contents were all a loss, making the home uninhabitable. Crews remained on the scene on Tuesday morning, doing an overall check of the building, investigating the cause, and doing some cleanup work. Vicki?
All right, next we're going to go to the opinions, editorials. Mason City Update. It's budget season in Mason City City Hall. Editor's note. Each month, City Administrator Aaron Burnett writes an update on city business for the mayor and city council. In order to invigorate engagement and involvement with local government, we'll reprint his report here. Mayor and city council members, as budget season is nearly upon the city, departments are completing their list and preparing the proposals for review. I will start reviewing these soon and completing my recommendation to council for the upcoming fiscal year's capital projects. This is always a difficult task due to the competition for scarce resources. However, the city has consistently worked to limit growth in the tax levy while maintaining strong reserves in various funds. In fact, the city has had an average annual increase in property taxes of less than 1% over the last 5 years. This fiscal responsibility creates a lower cost for interest payments on bonds and a higher confidence in the city withstanding any future economic uncertainty. Excuse me. This year will be no different, as the city will balance the frequently conflicting interest of ensuring the highest level of service with the lowest tax burden possible and preparing for any potential negative impacts from upcoming legislative and economic changes. With respect to the city's workforce, we continue to experience significant turnover in the departments, primarily due to retirements. City staff is working diligently to fill these positions and provide training to ensure the citizens do not experience any decrease in city services provided. Maintaining a well-trained workforce presents more of a challenge, as we must accelerate promotions within the departments. To combat this challenge, city management has identified these obstacles as priorities for the upcoming year, and efforts are already underway to ensure continuity and resilience in departments. This training is a mixture of external training, internal training, and simple cross-training on duties within departments. As for an update on the River City Renaissance projects, the arena is in full push to open. Contractors are everywhere in the building and offices. The final efforts to complete installations, inspections, startup, stocking and coordination with vendors and partners is daunting. The efforts of everyone involved cannot be commended enough through this hectic period. I would encourage anyone interested in holding an event in the new arena to start contacting the Recreation Department for the general information, or the North Iowa Bulls if it will be specifically during a Bulls hockey game. Staff is answering numerous questions related to groups interested in the space, and a schedule is being established for both ice and non-ice events. The hotel continues through design and the city is preparing for the spring transfer of the hotel land to Gatehouse for the construction of the hotel and conference center. Lastly, the preliminary designs for the pavilion should be released in the next month for the public to view. Cold weather is setting in to North Iowa, and residents need to be aware of the alternate side parking restrictions and stay updated via media, social media, or the city's website to avoid tickets. Excuse me. The alternate side parking allows for streets to be cleared appropriately, and enforcement this year will again be substantial to ensure the travel lanes of the city streets are as clear as possible. Last year was particularly hard on the city's equipment, and several replacements will be identified in the upcoming budget. However, city staff has worked to prepare the city's snow removal and sanding equipment, and the city is prepared for the eventual winter storms that will hit the area. As always, I would encourage people to call or email the city with any comments or concerns, and to please report slippery streets, unshoveled sidewalks, and other dangerous winter conditions to the city for remediation. Diane?
The opinion page also has a guest column by Aaron Murphy. Aaron Murphy covers Iowa politics and government for Lee Enterprises. Unlike the leaders who preceded him, Pete Buttigieg did not face the firing squad during last week's presidential debate. Perhaps that was partly because of the impeachment proceedings and their polarizing effect on Americans. Whatever the case, Buttigieg's latest surge in the Democratic presidential primary has made him the frontrunner in the race in Iowa, according to several recent polls, including one by the Gold Standard and Seltzer's Iowa poll in the Des Moines Register and CNN. But unlike previous leaders in the race, Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren in particular, Buttigieg did not face hostility from his fellow candidates during the past week's debate in Atlanta. Biden and Warren, during separate debates, were clearly targeted on some issues by the other candidates. Buttigieg largely escaped such treatment. There were some thinly veiled references to experience and needing to build coalitions of support that include black voters. Both probably were raised with the intention of highlighting some perceived weaknesses of Buttigieg, but they were done with an understated way. They were nothing like the attacks Biden and Warren faced in previous debates. Sure, eventually Buttigieg had to confront a foreign policy broadside by Tulsi Gabbard, but that was extremely late in the debate, and it appears unlikely the back and forth did anything to damage Buttigieg. So why, despite taking the lead in Iowa in recent polls, did Buttigieg get out of the debate without a scratch? Why didn't the other candidates, especially those looking to make a jump in the polls, offer more pointed criticism? One thought is the impeachment proceedings may have tempered any Democrats' desire to go on attack during the debate. Evidence offered through myriad testimonies during the impeachment proceedings was compelling, but polls have showed the proceedings have done little to change the minds of Americans. In other words, most Americans are dug into their political trenches, and the impeachment hearings that dominated the TV airwaves this week likely only further fanned the flames of political rhetoric and partisan feelings across the country. Perhaps that's why most of the Democratic presidential candidates chose to avoid a contentious approach during the debate, which was televised in the evening after a day full of broadcast impeachment hearings. Perhaps those candidates felt that with the nation already politically over-caffeinated, that a raucous debate would only turn off potential voters. Perhaps they felt a softer tone was needed in impeachment's wake. No matter the reason, it was interesting to see Buttigieg get the debate equivalent of a front-runner's hall pass. Vicki?
Okay, next we'll have the obituaries. Okay, I'll read off who we have. We have Stephen Michael Holitz, Reverend Rose Marie Knack, Martha Wolf. All right, Stephen Michael Holitz, November 30th, 1945 to November 7th, 2019. Stephen Michael Holitz, 73, of Naperville, Illinois, after months of battling various infections, passed away in his sleep on November 7th in Naperville, Illinois. A military funeral service will be held in his honor at 10 a.m. on Monday, December 2nd, at the Abraham Lincoln National Military Cemetery in Elwood, Illinois. Pastor Reverend Daniel Miller of St. Timothy Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, will also attend the service. Stephen Michael Holitz was born on November 30, 1945, in Garner, Iowa, to the late Leroy and Agnes Holitz. In 1973, he graduated with a master's in computer science from Iowa State University after serving 1 year and 10 months in the Vietnam War. After graduation, he worked for the Navy for a year, then joined American Management Systems, now CGI Incorporated, an information technology consulting firm. He remained a loyal employee there for 36 years, retiring in 2011. Steve had many interests he enjoyed in his life. He was a lifetime member of the Planetary Society, bringing his family to observe solar eclipses and viewing other astronomical events using his telescope. A lifelong supporter of environmental conservation, Steve enjoyed family trips to national and state parks. He also liked to collect fossil specimens. In recent years, Steve had developed an intense interest in genealogy, researching and communicating to family members the history and lineage of the Holitz family. We all have learned interesting facts from his research. Steve also enjoyed reading, watching sci-fi movies, solving coding puzzles to keep his computer programming skills sharp, and attending family get-togethers and class reunions. Steve was always gentle, patient, and kind to his family and to others in his life. He was a man of few words, but when he spoke, it was always to the point and full of meaning. His knowledge of a diverse range of subjects made for lively family conversations at the dinner table, and the family enjoyed board games and jigsaw puzzles together during the holidays. Allison enjoyed discussing topics in the fields of science and technology with Dad, and Tim had enjoyed his nightly bedtime story with Dad for all these years. Diane?
Reverend Rose Marie Knack died at Johnson Memorial Care Center in Dawson, Minnesota on November 24, 2019. Christ the King Sunday at the age of 77. Jesus was truly her King, and she dedicated her life to bringing God's grain of mercy and love to all. She understood her life as blessed to be a blessing. She was indeed an extraordinary blessing to everyone who knew her. Visitation will be held on Tuesday, November 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Hanson and Dahl Funeral Home in Dawson. Services in celebration of the life of Rose Marie Knack will be held Wednesday, November 27, 2019 at 2 p.m. at Johnson Memorial Care Center Chapel in Dawson, Minnesota, and November 30, 2019 at 2 p.m. at St. John's Lutheran Church of Rock Township, rural Osage, Iowa. Reverend Rose Marie Knack was born February 1, 1942 in Davenport, Washington, the only child of Harvey and Alma Flansburg. She was baptized on May 17, 1942, and confirmed on June 10, 1956, the Trinity Lutheran Church in Vancouver, Washington. Rose Marie graduated from Hudson Bays High School in Vancouver, Washington in 1960, and after 2 years at Pacific Lutheran University as a voice major and member of the Choir of the West, she graduated in 1964 from the University of Washington. In 1992, she received her Master's of Divinity from Luther Northwestern Theological Seminary. Rose Marie was the pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church, Rock Township, Iowa, Faith Lutheran in Mitchell, Iowa, and visitation pastor at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Grafton, Iowa, from 1992 until her retirement in 2002. She was the first woman pastor in that area. Rose Marie married the Reverend Jack R. Lewis in 1962, with whom she had three daughters. Together they lived in Bremerton, Washington, and Tübingen, Germany, before serving churches in the San Francisco Bay Area of California, where Rose Marie was the church choir director, a piano teacher, a nursery school teacher, and started a summer music school. After taking classes at Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary in Berkeley, California, she enrolled full-time at Luther Northwestern Theological Seminary and was ordained in the Northeastern Iowa Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America on August 16, 1992. Rose Marie married Gene Knack in 1998, a farmer from Iowa. In July 2016, she moved into Johnson Memorial Care Center, Dawson, Minnesota, where she loved making new friends, served as the residential council president, authored the welcome booklet for new residents, continued to lead chapel worship, and offered pastoral care to those in need. She was pastor emeritus, Grace Lutheran Church, Dawson, Minnesota. Rose Marie was a gifted singer, a wonderful host, a seamstress, and a person of profound faith. She loved music, studying theology, and being a pastor. Feeling especially called to rural ministry, Rose Marie immersed herself in the community and learned everything she could about farming. She once said, "If I was going to talk the talk on Sunday morning, I had to walk the walk the week before. I had to be involved in the lives of the people who called me to be their shepherd." Rose Marie was also an author, having written two books and actively thinking about what her third book might be. In Lieu of Flowers, Please Send Memorials to St. John's Lutheran Church of Rock Township in Osage, Iowa, or Johnson Memorial Care Center, Dawson, Minnesota. Vicki.
Martha I. Wolf, July 11, 1945 to November 22, 2019. Martha I. Wolf, 74, of Clear Lake, passed away on Friday, November 22, 2019, at Mercy One, North Iowa, in Mason City. A memorial visitation will be held Saturday, November 30, 2019, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at St. James Lutheran Church, located at 1148 4th Street Southeast, Mason City, with a memorial service beginning at 11 a.m. with Reverend Sid Bowles officiating. A private family interment will be held at a later date. Martha Irene Sis Wolf was born on July 11, 1945 in Bancroft, Iowa, to Virgil and Irene Lobbs Wolf. She graduated from St. John's High School in 1963. Martha married Roger Rowe in 1968, and to this union, four children were born. Years later, she was reunited with her high school sweetheart, Richard Steffes. The couple made their home on North Shore Drive in Clear Lake, where Martha loved living by the lake. Over the years, Martha worked at the Best Western and Opportunity Village in Clear Lake, and since 2000, she has worked at Walmart in the fabric department. She was a very hard worker, working until the time of her passing. She loved visiting with her Walmart customers at the fabric table and was involved in the Children's Miracle Network fundraising. In her free time, she enjoyed playing solitaire, rescuing strays, and a family get-togethers and going overboard on the food. Her grandchildren meant the world to her. Martha loved spending time with them, hosting sleepovers, cooking special meals, even breakfast in bed, going to their events and spoiling them every chance she got. Her favorite things were Richard, John Denver, cats, her children and grandchildren, not necessarily in that order. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is in charge of her arrangements.
And now we're going to go back to the opinion page quickly because there are three letters to the editor that you may be interested in hearing. The first one is from Tom Toma, a Salvation Army board member. Ever since Mayor Schickels suggested I serve on the Salvation Army board, my eyes have been opened continually to all the good our local unit does. I have watched as people down on their luck come for assistance, whether it's for clothing or signing up for holiday food baskets. I've seen a hungry man stop in during our board meeting, asking if he could get something to eat, and he was given a meal. These are among the many ways the Salvation Army works miracles for those in need with few questions asked. This is the season you can help these miracles happen. The Red Kettle Campaign funds many activities throughout the year. This year, we've lost a major location with the closing of Shopko. So if you have the time, please consider ringing the bells. It's great fun with family, friends, or by yourself. And you can sign up online with the Salvation Army. And of course, when you're out and about, please consider dropping a donation in the kettle. Remember, these donations are needed for operations all year. The need is significant. We hope you can give someone a miracle through your gift of time and money. Happy holidays. Again, this is from Tom Toma, Salvation Army board member.
Next, we have most of Congress's actions would land them in the principal's office, by Mark Doble, Clear Lake. With the end of the impeachment inquiry comes the task of analyzing the outcome. The problem we have is that there are no longer a United States of America, but rather two separate united fronts of political choice. With the result, the Democrats will announce victory as the Republicans will view the same evidence as a victory for their party. The truth is the only ones to lose are the Americans who hold on to the hope that we can unite for the good of our country and not for the good of our party. Whether one or the other eventually is able to claim victory, let's examine the aftermath of what we witnessed. As a retired para in a school system, I must say that most of the rhetoric and choice of words, as well as the manner that it was expressed, would have landed our elementary students in the principal's office. To call people scum, to publicly ridicule and demean others, and to question their allegiance to the USA because they are questioning the manner that things were carried out, would require students to sit in the principal's office to work things out. Democrats, you also have no reason to be proud as you make statements that Trump is the most crooked president of all time. That is an opinion and cannot be validated by facts. Is there hope for reconciliation in our political differences? Senator John McCain, although not the candidate that I voted for, did not resort to belittling and name-calling when he had differences. Is there a chance that we can embrace that attitude as we attempt to heal our differences? Do you really want to make America great again? Then let's return to the common decency when addressing our fellow party members. And this was submitted by Mark Doble, Clear Lake. Diane?
This final letter, is from Michelle Hall from Waverly. I'm writing you on behalf of the United Way of North Central Iowa during its 2019 campaign season. As Director of Community Engagement for Friends of the Family, our organization has worked with United Way of North Central Iowa as a partner agency for many years, and the difference that United Way funding has made to our programs and the clients we serve has been immeasurable. United Way of North Iowa's North Central Iowa funding is essential to the North Iowa Rapid Housing Initiative. These funds help us provide rental assistance, deposit assistance, and case management to those who are affected by homelessness. United Way is a vital partner in supporting our fight to end homelessness. Our United Way of North Central Iowa partners with local nonprofits to facilitate programs designed to help community members achieve their best lives. Among many things, money donated to United Way helps feed the hungry, move people from homelessness to financial stability, mentor children, supports reading education, and provides much-needed assistance to victims of physical and sexual abuse, all within our North Central Iowa region. I encourage you to join me in supporting our United Way North Central Iowa. Together, we can continue to build our community and live united. This letter is from Michelle Hall of Waverly. Yeah.
And now we'll go to sports. Globe Gazette 2019 All-Area Volleyball Team. Osage named Team of the Year. Tabert gets coach nod. With the beginning of the winter sports season upon us, it is time to look back at the best of fall. The North Iowa volleyball session ended with Osage's loss in the state semifinals to Western Christian. Regardless, many athletes put up fantastic numbers this season. Here is the 2019 Globe Gazette All-Area Volleyball Team. Danielle Johnson, junior at Osage. Johnson was the Green Devils and the area's leading scorer this season with 456 kills. Her 4.22 kills per set average was also top among area players. Johnson was named to the 2A Northeast All-District team, was a Class 2A first-team All-State selection, the top of Iowa West All-Conference first team, and was also named the Class 2A Player of the Year. Next is Paige Kisley, junior at Osage. Kisley was a dominant offensive force for the Green Devils, finishing the season with 426 kills, a 3.94 kills per set average, and an impressive 72 aces, tied for the 11th best in the state. For her efforts, Kisley's was named a Class 2A Northeast All-District player, a top of Iowa First Team All-Conference, a Class 2A First Team All-Stater. Next, we have Ellie Bobinet, Jr. in Osage. In her first season as the Green Devils' starting setter, Bobinet became one of the state's biggest talents. She finished the season with a program record of 1,189 assists, good for second in the state with an Iowa best 11.22 assists per set. Bobinet was a Class 2A Northeast All-District selection, a top of Iowa West All-Conference, as well as a Class 2A second-team All-State player. Next, we have Jessica Gastiger, senior at Lake Mills. The Bulldogs' fiery setter had an outstanding season, leading the team with 778 assists for an average of 7.63 assists per set. She also had a team-high 249 digs on a season on her way to a Class 2A Northeast All-District nod and a top of Iowa West All-Conference first selection team. Next, we have Kylie Greenfield, Jr., Lake Mills. Greenfield led the Bulldogs with 363 kills this year and also finished with 59 aces. Greenfield paced the Bulldogs on offense, helping to lead the team to its 17th top of Iowa West crown in the past 18 years. Greenfield was named a Class 2A Northeast All-District selection and a top of Iowa West All-Conference first-team player. Greenfield and Gastiger were also named Conference Co-Players of the Year. Next, we have Brooklyn Hackbart, junior at St. Ansgar. The Saints junior finished 8th in the state with 79 aces on the season, 31 more than any other Saints player. Her serving prowess helped the Saints to a 17-10 record on the season. Hackbart was named to the Class 2A North Central All-District team and the top of Iowa first-team All-Conference team. Next, we have Molly McCauley, junior in Algona. The Bulldogs junior led the team in kills with 321 kills for an average of 3.53 per set, fifth best in the area. Her kills total was 19 more than any other Bulldogs player. She was named to the Class 3A Central All-District team. Next, we have Abby Holmes, senior, Algona. Holmes was a force in multiple ways for Algona in 2019. She finished with a team-high 366 digs for an average of 4.21 digs per set. Holmes also finished second on the team with 302 kills. For her efforts, Holmes was named to the Class 3A Central All-District team. Next, we have Maddie Meister, senior, Bishop Garrigan. Meister was named to the Class 1A North Central All-District team after leading the Golden Bears with 485 digs on the season tops in the area and 17th most in the state. Her average of 5.39 digs per set ranked 14th best in Iowa. Meister was also named to the top of Iowa West first team. Next is Katie Noonan, senior, Bishop Garrigan. Noonan helped to power the Golden Bears offense this season, finishing with a team-high 269 kills this season, along with 268 digs, and was named to the Class 1A North Central All-District team, as well as the top of Iowa West first team. The Golden Bears finished with a 19-12 record behind a strong senior class. Next, we have Sydney Eichlenborg, junior, North Butler. The junior Bearcat led the squad with 252 kills on the season and acted as the spark behind 25-10 North Butler's offense. Eichlenborg was named a Class 1A North Central All-District player and a top of Iowa West All-Conference first-team player. Next, we have Brooklyn Hackbart, junior, St. Ansgar. The St. Ansgar junior had 172 kills on the season, second most on the team, but shined with a team-high 247 digs. Hackbart averaged 2.84 digs per set and finished with 23 blocks. She was named to the Class 1A North Central All-District team and the top of Iowa West first team. Then we have Grace Tobin, senior, Mason City. Mason City's senior leader finished with a team-high 308 kills with an average of 3.62 kills per set, in addition to 49 aces. Her offensive firepower was a big part of the Mohawks' three-win improvement to 10-22 on the season. Tobin was named to the CIML All-Conference second team. Next, we have Emma Havinga, senior in Forest City. Havinga finished the season with 664 assists, good for an average of 7.72 per set. She also had 175 digs. Her setting ability helped power Forest City to a 20-13 record. Havinga was named a top of Iowa West All-Conference first-team selection. Team of the Year, Osage. The Green Devils were the last remaining team area team, making it all the way to the state semifinals, where they fell to Western Christian in three sets. The Green Devils began the season with a 21-1 record, en route to finishing the season 37-7. The Green Devils won the top of Iowa East crown and beat Emmitsburg to take the Class 2A Region 2 championship. Next, we have Coach of the Year, Brian Tabbert, Osage. In his first season as head coach, Tabbert brought a new and positive energy to the program. Tabbert served as an assistant coach for the program for the past two seasons before taking the helm this past year. His players give Tabbert and his calm demeanor on the sideline plenty of credit for getting the team to its championship level. Diane?
And Mason City girls get defensive win. The Mason City girls basketball team showed it could play smothering defense Monday night in a 69-31 win in Des Moines North. While the Mohawks started slow, they held the Tigers to just 4 first period points. West Des Moines could only manage 27 more points the rest of the game against the stifling Mason City defense. We got off to a slow start and did not shoot well, but we met our goals defensively and created numerous easy basket opportunities with our press, Mohawks head coach Kurt Klassen said. Senior Anna Dietz led the 2-0 Mohawks with 29 points and 3 steals, while senior Jada Whitner finished with 11 points and 3 steals. Sophomore Jada Williams had 10 points and 6 rebounds. Mason City will play its home opener Tuesday against Ames High School. And the Northwood Kensett was 44 and North Iowa 26. A big second period propelled the Vikings to a win over the Bison in their season opener at home. The Vikings and Bison matched each other in the first, third, and fourth periods, but the third period was the difference, as Northwood Kensett outscored North Iowa 19-1. Clara Davidson led the Vikings with 12 points, while Hannah Main had 12 to pace the North Iowans. The Vikings play at home on Tuesday against North Butler, while the Bison host Garner Hayfield Ventura on Tuesday. And then in bowling, the girls, Mason City girls bowled team, the Mason City girls bowling team downed Des Moines Hoover by 923 pins in the Mohawks season opener Monday at Mystic Lanes in Mason City. Adrian Ott led the Mohawks with a 2-game score of 324, while Ava Horde finished with a score of 308. Mason City will be at Roosevelt on Thursday, and the Mohawks lost by 182 pins on Tuesday night in their boys' season opener. Aaron Pope had the high 2-game series of 393 for the Mohawks, followed by Andrew White's 380. Mason City's Joe Euchre had a high game of 216, followed by White's 207. The Mohawks will be at Newton Invitational on December 7th.
This brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Wednesday, November 27th. Your readers have been Diane and Vicki. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.